Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Constructive Criticism. I am your host, Spencer, and I am joined by the return of the Kling himself, MT Jesus, Matt Kling. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
What is going on? Like, you just think that you can come back to this podcast whenever you want, whenever you're playing Magic again, you just can just be the co-host?
I think I'll be happy to come back on whenever I'm asked.
I'm happy to have you back, man. I've missed you.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because, you know, I talk to you all the time, but you know what I meant.
miss me in this setting, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this week we're going to be talking about everybody's favorite topic, net decking, and it's going to be a pretty fun one. Before we get into that, we're going to go into the regular part of the show and always improving. However, Matt, we have to kind of recognize that it's been a year since you were on the show. There's new listeners, and they might not know who you are. So why don't you kind of just take a minute to talk about you as a Magic player, kind of what your goals in Magic have been and what you've either accomplished or what you hope to accomplish, you know, both on the podcast and off.
Sure. So I am one of the original co-hosts of Constructive Criticism. I was a PTQ grinder back when they had PTQs before they did PPTQs, and then am now again now that they have PTQs again. I've been to one Pro Tour, top 8 at a GP, and yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at.
What do you think? You know, what do you think you're going to bring to the podcast that might be a little bit different than what Train Mason brought?
Well, I hope that I can bring some insight just through. I don't know.
Sheer volume.
Yeah, I mean, just I play a lot of games. Let's put it that way. So I have a lot of in-depth experience with most things.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to have you back, man, and I hope the listeners are too. Let's get into always improving. Always improving is the point of the show. We want to be getting better all the time, and we want to share our experiences of that with you as we try and improve. We hope that it can help you as well. For me this week, I played a lot more Smash than I did Magic, for what it's worth. But the Magic I did play was really fun and really interesting. I think this format is super interesting. So I played Mono Red. I was trying to kind of just solidify a week one Mono Red list that I would be interested in playing. Trying stuff out for the event this weekend, where you can win every card in Standard on Arena. And so I played quite a bit with a couple different Mono Red lists. And I learned quite a bit. I changed cards. One of my biggest always improving moments is that I didn't trust my gut, and I like adjusted my deck list and I was playing. Do you know what Dorvin Mine is? It's a. It comes into play untapped if you have three or more mountains, and if it comes into play untapped, it just makes a 1/1 dwarf.
Okay.
And a bunch of red lists that I saw had them in it, and I was like, well, I must be missing something. I think this card's pretty bad, and I played it, and I luckily had a mountain in my sideboard for my more expensive stuff, and I boarded it. I played it one. I had it in one game, and I was like, "This is the worst card in my deck," and boarded it out for the mountain in every game. So
it comes into play tapped if you don't have three mountains.
Correct.
Okay. I don't know. I'm still unsure on that card. That doesn't sound that bad.
It was pretty bad. Like, not. I mean, it made it so that you couldn't reliably like trigger. You have your one drops to trigger your the spells that cost one if you've dealt damage. And that was pretty rough, but I don't know. I could be wrong. I know that I've seen a lot more lists playing, and also I just replaced it with a castle, which was actually really good. That's the new one that makes your creatures +1/+0. That card's been great. So
right, yeah. It seems like the rare ones there is a lot less cost too, right? You just have to have one mountain.
Yeah. So that card's been great, and yeah, I kind of relearned that sometimes it's okay to trust your own gut. Like, making people prove you wrong is totally okay in Magic, and sometimes I think that we as Magic players forget that, and this is one of those times where I definitely lost a game because that card was in my deck.
Sure, I can agree with that, but what I would say is that you didn't really lose that much by playing one game with this card and then finding out that it was bad, right? Whereas you could have lost a lot by just deciding that it was bad.
That's true. Maybe the loss of that game was well worth the price of entry.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think that that's that big of a cost for most events, right? Like, if you were going to, like, an event that you wouldn't get another shot at in the near future, like a Grand Prix or a PTQ or something like that, or even a game day, depending on what level you're at.
Yeah. You know. I'm certainly not afraid to try stuff out and prove myself wrong, right? And that's certainly not the message that I'm trying to send. I'm just saying sometimes, you know, I think that I've been known to, at least to myself, I've been known to be swayed by other people's opinions a little too easily. And this is one of those times where I was quite sure it was bad and was correct. And I don't know. I think that you're right. Maybe it just doesn't matter. I mean, it's just a little bit of gold on Arena. So,
well, the lesson that you can still take away though is that it's good to trust your gut, right? Like, I think that if you were doubting yourself,
right,
then that's different, right? Like, you can still try a card even if you're not necessarily doubting yourself.
That's fair.
But believing that you're right is a good thing.
Yeah. What about you? What did you do to improve at Magic or Life this week?
Well, as usual, I feel like I've said this for this segment many times, but what I've done to improve at Magic is I played a lot of Magic this week.
Yeah, I was looking at the points on your account between the formats for MTGO. You mean you say a lot of Magic? You're just like trying to get 50 in every format.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just started playing on Magic Online again. Less than a month ago, right?
Yeah. And, I think we just renewed Mana Traders. I mean, I just renewed my Mana Traders for this month, so.
Right.
And I think you started around the same time I did.
Right. Yeah. And I got like, you know, almost 60 modern points and like 25 legacy points and 15 vintage points. So.
So how do you, I mean, obviously like you work at Oasis, you have that, but how do you, I mean, you just play a ton of Magic. Like, you're just kind of a gamer, or how does playing that much Magic really help you?
Yeah. I mean, I just like to play Magic a lot in my spare time, regardless of whether I'm prepping for anything. It really helps you by just like Modern, especially it helps you because I just know all the decks in the format. So if there's ever a point when like the metagame makes a shift, I don't have to worry about what I'm going to do. Right. Like, I can always just play the best deck.
Right.
So that's really helpful. And even beyond that, just knowing what my opponents are trying to do is really helpful. So like, let's say they right now, Wurza is the best deck. Now, even if I decide I'm not going to play Wurza, it's nice that I've put in so many reps with it because now I know like pretty much the sideboard cards my opponents are going to have, what they're going to try to do to execute their game plans, which turns they can win on, things like that.
Is there any major takeaways you've had from Modern over the last couple weeks?
Devoted Druid is super underrated. I think it's the best deck in the format.
Did you see my tier list that I posted today?
I did not.
Oh, it's because you're not in the Discord or the Utah MTG group. I had it in S tier.
Nice.
Bringing the S tier to Magic.
I agree. I played a deck recently just to try it out. I tried a Kethis combo deck with Emery, mm-hmm. and it felt kind of powerful, but as long as Devoted Druid is in the format, there's just no reason to play this deck. It was just like bad Devoted Druid.
Do you think that I mean, I think that Urza is the best deck, for what it's worth. Why don't you think Urza is the best deck?
I think it is the best deck in the vacuum. I think Devoted Druid is the best deck in my mind because it has good matchups against all the best decks.
That's fair. That's a good reason. I think that's like good logic. So, well, let's move on to our Patreon. This week, there's no shoutouts for new patrons this week, but we did get a question from Adrian, and I think it's a pretty good one, Matt. Adrian asked, can you go a bit in on how you watch streams to learn and improve? And I thought this question was interesting. One, because I don't know that I'm always doing it that way. And two, because it's interesting that that's something that people are looking for, because that's kind of what we are trying to do with Constructed Clash every week that we're doing. It is helping people get better while we try and get better.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that as far as learning from watching streams, it really depends on where you're at. If I'm watching a stream, depending on where my skill level is in a game, I'll get more or less from it, right? Like, so right now, I've just started learning how to play Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. So, like, I can watch a stream in every single game that I watch. I'm learning so much, just consuming all the information. Whereas if I was watching a Magic stream, the biggest ways that I learn things from Magic streams is if I find somebody that has a specialty. Like, for instance, I'll watch Susurrus if I'm trying to play a Prism deck, because he's just, like, the person that I go to for that kind of thing. Or if I'm trying to play, Jund, I'll watch a Reduke video.
Yeah, I find myself doing that a lot more too, like going and finding VODs of either streams from Reduke if I want to play a midrange deck, or streams from other streamers that like are known for their decks that they play, right? I actually feel the exact same way. I know that Quentin sent me a link to a bunch of Gen videos that Reed had just played in Modern, and it was like, well, this is just like, where else are you gonna get this information?
Right, definitely. The other big takeaway that I get usually when I'm watching somebody, especially when they specialize in the deck, is their sideboarding strategies are very interesting to me. It's not even just necessarily just for the straight takeaway of, these cards are good in this matchup, these cards are bad in this matchup. It's more telling of what they think the deck's role is in that matchup.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, specifically where they think that their strengths lie with their deck in the matchup is something that you really can take away from how they decide they want a sideboard.
Right. Like, for instance, I mean, Reed Duke was actually the first person that I ever saw citing out their discard spells in the Jund Mirror. And that was not only interesting to me because it made a lot of sense, but also it really brought to light that in the Jund Mirror, you don't want to be like the aggressive deck. Like, in my mind, when you have Thought Seizes in Jund, it's actually because you need to be the aggressive deck, right? You usually want Thought Seizes against control and combo,
Right.
but you don't want Thought Seizes against like the aggro decks a lot of times and against the mirror. And that was just really interesting to me to highlight that, like, you definitely don't want to be the most aggressive person in the Jund Mirror.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because if you think about what the role Thought Seize is playing, it's actually to break up either synergies or take key cards that are going to disrupt you, or it's to disrupt them, right? And the reason you want to disrupt them is to slow them down, and the reason that you want to stop the, and then the reason you would want, or you want to stop them from slowing you down. So
Right.
it just, by its nature, is kind of an aggressive card.
Right.
That's it. I had never thought of it that way, so that's interesting. But yeah, I think that shakes out. For me, when I think about this question, I have also been learning Smash Ultimate recently, and think about just the sheer number of the sheer amount of content I've been watching, whether it's tournament streams or things like that. What you said is so true that depending on the level you're at, the your brain is like a sponge and it just takes in so much stuff. And so it, I one thing that I've been doing that I've actually found I'm learning a lot from is watching tournaments. Because, I can go watch a combo guide and I can go watch a deck tech on a deck, but what's really cool to see is like how people play those decks. And so, going and finding specific content is exactly what I've been doing. Watching videos on how to play certain characters in Smash, and then going and applying that while either having that video up or, listening to that content is really, really helpful. And I don't think it's any different for Magic. I think that I can go watch the, I mean, we're going to talk about our deck of the week this week, and Brian Gottlieb, I think, did two videos on this deck in the last week that you can go and watch about the deck that we're going to talk about. And who else would you want to go to for the deck other than the person that like helped start it? And I think that, your targeted advice is probably the best advice that I would give to Adrian as well. I mean, it breaks down into what are you trying to learn? Go to the best information you can for learning that. And, I think that a lot of different streams have different purposes, right? You could be watching a stream and it's kind of just about having fun and hanging out with friends, or you could be watching a stream that like they're trying to get better. I remember I was watching a player who plays Smash. His name is Hungrybox. He's the best Melee player in the world right now. And he was playing Smash Ultimate and he was trying to learn his favorite character in this new game. And so like, just kind of watching this player that is a master of one thing, try and learn another thing, was really interesting, and really interesting to like see his process of how he was just going through the steps of learning. And I think that, if you find streamers that do that, you're gonna learn a lot more.
That's definitely helpful. And it's also important to note that if you are watching a lot of different streamers from a game, you might notice that some of them are better at some things and not as good at other things. So it can be nice to like mix it up a little bit. Like I was playing a lot of Teamfight Tactics not too long ago, and I would definitely look to a few different streamers, mostly for entertainment value, but also to learn. And I would notice that like some of them were like a lot better at other things, and some of them were better at other things, and try to just incorporate, as much of each of them as I could into my game.
Yeah, I know that like there are plenty of streamers in Magic that like time out all the time, and people get frustrated. They're like, "Listen, I'm not here to like win a bunch of matches. I'm here to like help players improve at Magic." And so, like, if that's what you're here for, then like, welcome. I think that finding those kind of streamers is gonna be really helpful, especially because I think often those people are specialty, like they're doing the same kind of streams a lot.
Right.
So, anyway, thank you so much for the question, Adrian. If you want to ask questions, you go over to patreon.com/ccmtg and become a patron of the show. It's an awesome way to support the show, and it means a lot to us. Another way you can support the show is by going to our sponsor over to Wasteless Games, and this is where I get to make a pretty cool announcement, Matt. So, I'm going to go ahead and change the screen for those of you watching at home to announce a free $500 MTG Arena quarterly tournament for Constructive Criticism. So, every quarter, we're going to have $500 on the line, free entry to an Oasis Game Store credit. And we're just going to give that out to the members of our Discord. Entry is free. We'll figure out the structure. We'll figure out the kind of the prize breakdown and commentating and stuff like that. But we just wanted to get the information out there. If you're listening to the show and you're not a part of the Discord, you know, head on over, join the Discord. The links are in the show notes. And yeah, it's gonna be really fun. And that's brought to you by our sponsor over at Oasis. It's really cool that we get to do this with them and kind of give back to the constructive criticism community.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, between them and us doing that.
Yeah. And you know, let's be honest, they also employ you, so you know,
Yeah,
that's other cool
I
things for them.
certainly owe them a lot.
But yeah, you can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com or mtgoasis.com. You can use the code CCMTG for 15% off of your first order, and use the code Would That Be Good for 4% off of every order. Let's be honest here, Matt. That was not quite as good as a Trey ad.
No, probably not. I mean, also, we didn't have a great segue, though.
Hey, I was announcing a tournament series.
Just saying, we need to step up our segue game. That's all.
I'll improve my segue game. It's been a while, man. It's been a while. I was like not I was not feeling it. I wasn't sure, like, people are gonna be so disappointed there's no Trey ad. I'm gonna have to hear about it. But, you know, to ease the burden, I'm announcing I'm giving you free money. There you
Money
go.
does generally soften the blow.
Yeah, it really helps. Well, let's go and talk about our deck of the week this week. Matt, we are going to talk about what are you going to call this? Because people get mad at me for calling it what it's called. What do you call this?
I mean, I would probably call it Esper Stacks at the moment, just because that's the name that has been given to it. I don't really think that there is. I mean, it doesn't really matter, right? As long as we both know what we're talking about, I don't think
Yeah.
that it matters what it's called.
So we're talking about the deck that Brian Gottlieb won the Phantom Legends tournament with earlier this week, or maybe it was the end of last week. Anyway, and we're gonna specifically be looking at a list by Carlos Romano, who took second at the Phantom Casters Cup. I think it was either the next day or the day after that. So shortly after that. You know, Carlos actually took the same deck and got second with it, and that's the list that we have up here, as it's a little bit newer. We have three Murderous Rider, four Teferi Time Reveler, one Liliana Dreadhorde General, three Dance of the Mance, four Thought Erasure, four Kaya's Wrath, four Golden Egg, four Gilded Globe, or Guild Globe, one Wishclaw Talisman, four Oath of Kaya, three Doom Foretold. We have 25 lands, with three Fabled Passage. And one Castlevantress kind of being the newest additions, as well as four God of the Shrine, four we have four Hollowed Fountain, four Temple of Silence, and four Watery Grave. So I think only Temple of Silence is the only temple they're playing, and then they're playing all 12 Shocklands.
Right. I assume that not playing more temples is just a concession to, you know, needing to have untapped lands at some point.
Yeah, I mean, and Fabled Passage kind of fixes your mana a little bit better on the like, while being a something that can be untapped later. So.
Yeah, this is honestly the kind of deck where I think that Fabled Passage really shines in. Like, decks where it's not actually that important if you have your first or second land untapped.
Yeah, I think so too. Really quick on the sideboard, we have three Duress, two Devout Decree, two Disenchant, two Dovin's Veto, three Noxious Grasp, two Elderspell, and one Realm Cloak Giant. So. Matt, the first thing that I want to mention is of the decks that I just did a video over on the YouTube channel that kind of talked about this tournament and the decks that top aided and did well. And let me just tell you that Duress Noxious Grasp is like apparently just the best sideboard cards in Standard right now, because all the best decks are playing them.
I mean, that's not that unbelievable, right? Like, The color hosers are always going to be pretty good. I don't know which one specifically is the best right now, but you can see that, I mean, in this sideboard, we have two of them even, between that and the Decree, Devout Decree, rather.
Yeah. So the reason that we picked this deck is it also won the first tournament on day zero, and then, you know, it kind of ran it back, taking second at the next tournament. So what is it that this deck is doing, Matt?
I mean, you're playing pretty much just a traditional Esper control deck. The only difference being that your win condition is a little bit out there. It plays a lot of these artifacts that generate value in some way, and then reanimates them with Dance the Manse. And eventually, I assume that you can probably, you know, cast a Dance of the Manse for value at some point, and then later on in the game when you cast it for, I believe it's six or more? Six or more, then they all become 4/4s. So.
Yeah, so Golden Egg and Gilded Globe, I think they both just ETB to draw a card. And then one of the things that I had heard, and actually that I got to see from one of my opponents this week on Arena, is Gilded Globe fixing your mana is actually pretty gas. And then Golden Egg, you know, gaining life and fixing your mana is also gas. Like, the color fix thing is actually really helpful for this deck because it's kind of got some pretty intensive mana requirements.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's probably slightly better than it was back when you were trying to play Absorb, but... not a ton.
Yeah. The other thing that to note here is Doom Foretold. So this card is a card that we were talking about on our pick two set review last week that I think it was Mason that was excited about it. Immediately just goes and wins the first tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a pretty pushed card, right? The Abyss only costs 4 mana, right?
Yeah.
And this is, like, mostly better than that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think one of our friends, Michael, former host of the show, said that it was a smokestack that started on one or something like that.
I'm not sure. I don't think it's anything like smokestack, but, you know.
But the card, I mean, that's why the deck is called Stacks, man.
I realized that. I was going to go a little bit more into that, you know, when we were talking about it, but I don't see any reason to call this deck Stacks, but... I will be calling it that for now because it's called Stacks. So.
Sure. Is it interesting to you that Thought Erasure does well at the first tournament?
Yeah, that's actually not that typical, especially in a 5-set format. Like, usually the aggressive decks are a lot better.
Yeah. Do you think just being the only deck that can... I mean, I guess you could play like some kind of white-black deck, but, you know, getting to play Kaya's Wrath... and, you know, already having Teferi. I mean, you would think that this deck would have trouble with the aggro decks, but I the only time I've played against this, I played against this twice. I played against it with Temur, Elementals, and I played against it with Mono Red. I've beaten it both times, but, you know, it actually felt kind of rough for the aggro deck.
Yeah, a playset of Oath of Kaya is no joke. And obviously you can just cast the Murderous Riders as 2/3 life blinkers.
Yeah, it was a tough sell to beat this deck. I mean, the 2/3 on Murderous Rider, if you think about it, like, we got rid of Lightning Strike. You know, the Giant only deals 2 damage, Shock only deals 2 damage, so the 2/3 Rider is pretty good.
Yeah, I think that the reason that aggro didn't do well at this tournament compared to what I would usually expect is honestly just because the aggro decks are bad. I think that every one drop in this format sucks, so...
Yeah. That's...
Maybe I'll eat those words at some point, but it certainly looks like they did not try to give a lot of love to the one drops, at least in red, which honestly makes sense to me because you still have like Experimental Frenzy, you still have Runaway Steamkin. Those are just a really powerful engine. And if you continue to print good one drops for the deck as well, then we're just going to be dealing with mono red for a very long time.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Where do you think this deck is positioned? I mean, if we look at just the tournament that we're pulling it from, we have Bant Ramp coming in there. We have 2 Simic Ramp decks, 2 mono black. They call them aggro, but these are like not your typical aggro decks. We have Jund and Golgari, which are really just both adventure decks. So where do you think this deck kind of sits in this metagame that it found itself in?
I assume that it's good against the aggro decks. Even though these decks are a little bit more value driven, but even still, like, your Oath of Kaya's are going to do pretty well there. I assume that it is reasonable against the mid-range decks. Probably quite favored against them, in fact. I'm not sure what to make of the ramp matchup. It really depends on how deep they're going on the ramp. Like, if you look at Brian Gottlieb's list from the second fandom, his deck's going a lot bigger, which I think could be a problem for the deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much just a, it's got all the guild gates that you can kind of possibly want to get your Golos going. Playing the four full set of Golos and four Field of the Dead, so it is very much just like saying, I'm a Field of the Dead deck, let's go.
Right. And
Are
I
you
feel
sur-
like there was another matchup that I wanted to touch on, but I can't remember what it was now. Oh, the Simic Flash matchup, I assume, is quite bad.
Yeah, it's it, it it's that's definitely something that could be pretty rough. One of the things that I was looking at when I was kind of looking over just the first couple of events, the first 5-0s, is just the two colors that seem to be most important in Standard right now seem to be green and black. Whether it's and it's just it, do you think that's just like the sideboard cards or like where did we go from where the week one tournament is? Or the week one metagame really is made up of things that aren't mono red or like white aggressive decks.
Well, again, I think that they've really tried to tone down the amount of good aggressive one drops right now. I think that the reason for Black's dominance, especially, is because the Murderous Rider specifically is the best removal spell in the format.
Sure. And it kills Teferi.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. I mean, it's actually a little bit awkward against Teferi. Teferi is one of the better answers to it because, like, at least if they're holding up Murderous Rider, like they have to
Do it
untap
on
and
their
like they just
turn.
burn three mana.
Sure, that's fair. That's a
So,
good point.
but yeah, and I think green is just powerful because the creatures are really good in the deck right now. I mean, Magic is just going more and more in the way of, mid-range combat being the one that they focus on. So,
Yeah, I also think that like Hydroid Crisis, people were kind of sleeping on it again. They just kind of forgot that like it could just completely dominate a format all on its own.
yeah, definitely. There was some reason why Hydroid Crisis wasn't very good for a second, but I don't remember what it was now.
I mean, it was Narset, right?
Don't think so.
That's how I felt. Like, whenever I was playing against Narset, I was like, oh, this is awkward.
I can't recall right now, but I feel like there was a reason why it was pushed out of the format. But obviously a powerful card, so if the format becomes more nurturing for it, then be
Yeah.
excited to play him again.
One thing that I would be interested to see is how this deck does against the Fire of Inventions deck. Just like, even whether it's a Fae of Wishes version or just a straight Planeswalker version, I'd be interested to see kind of how those things shake out, but.
Definitely.
Cool. Well, that's going to do it for the deck of the week this week. Don't forget to check out the stuff that Brian Gottlieb has put out on it. I'm not going to just sit there and pretend like we're the source of knowledge on this deck. There's definitely people out there that you can be checking stuff out, and it's definitely a deck that you should look out for as you're going into, your standard tournaments coming up.
Yep, I agree.
Well, let's talk training grounds. Every week on the show, we want to talk about something that's hopefully going to make you better at Magic. And this week, we're going to talk about net decking done right. So, Matt, what is net decking?
Net decking is when you find a list online and then play that deck.
Yeah, so you just go on the net, because that was a thing that people said at one point. And then you play it, you get a deck, and then you play it, and then you're a net decker.
Right.
So, first question, Matt. Do we net deck?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do it all the time.
99% of the Magic I play is net decked.
Why do we do it?
Because it's much easier to find a deck list and then decide what you do and don't like about it and just play it the way that it is than it is to try to start from scratch and think about every single possible interaction in any format.
Yeah. So I have a couple things that I kind of want to touch on this. And the first one is just, I think one of the things that we should talk about first is kind of the stigma around it. And you had an interesting point before the show. You talked about how the stigma around net decking is often stigma that we place on ourselves rather than outside influences.
Yeah, I think there was a point, certainly when I started playing Magic competitively, like, what would that have been, like 12 years ago now, roughly?
You're making me feel old.
Where it was definitely, you were looked down upon if you were a net decker at like an FNM. But now I haven't seen that as much. I think that it's much more of a problem that people place on themselves, like people don't enjoy playing other people's decks or feel like it's somehow worth less if they're playing somebody else's deck, so they will just choose not to.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely something that a lot of players think that their accomplishments, or like if they go 5-0 a league, and they five and their it's not then their names won't get posted because they didn't change any cards. Somehow it makes their 5-0 matter less.
Yeah, and I think even beyond that, like I think that people don't even realize when they're making this mistake sometimes. Like, I've certainly known a lot of people that will just change a few cards out of a deck just to be able to call it their own, even though they're probably making changes that are just worse, and often they'll even know that they're worse changes.
Okay. How do you think that we break out of that stigma that we sometimes place on ourselves?
I think it's important to remember that deck building is only part of Magic.
And like, there are plenty of people who don't play their own decks at tournaments that do just fine on the Pro Tour.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the players that have done the best on the Pro Tours haven't played their own decks.
Right. And I think that, there's this the reason that the stigma exists is I think it was originally created to take something away from the people that are, improving at Magic and doing well, and you want to take something away from them because they're beating you. And then because we had that stigma for so long, I think people started placing it on themselves. And it's something that we can just, I think, move away from.
I don't know. I'm not even sure that the problem that people put on themselves is even related to like net decking in the traditional sense. I think people just like the idea of making something their own,
That's fair. So, like a human weakness.
yeah. But I think that if you're ever gonna try to build decks over using the internet, like building decks is fine. There's definitely a time and a place for it. And it's honestly just a lot of fun, right? That's the real secret, but if you're going to deny yourself the resource of looking at deck lists online, I would not expect to win a lot of matches.
Yeah, I think so too. I just think that the power of the hive mind overall is just super power. I mean, when we started playing Magic, we would have to scour for deck lists, right? Like it was work. You had to put in work to get deck lists. I mean, when we started the podcast, MTG Goldfish like was a glimmer in someone's eye. 6 years ago, that wasn't a thing. Like, I remember when MTGO Dash Stats came out and we started using that data on the podcast. That was like breaking. Like, that was something that nobody else was doing. And now it's like that site exists, but nobody uses it. They use Goldfish now.
Right.
And it's kind of just crazy to think about that mindset change of it's just it is so easy for me to go online and just find a good deck list.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean,
I spent I mean I spend a lot of time on Goldfish, like even when I'm, at work or whatever, if I just have a downtime for a second, I'll look at the lists on Goldfish to just try to see what other people are doing. Sometimes it'll spark ideas for, something that I want to do. Sometimes I'll just think that somebody else's idea is really cool and I want to try it. So.
Yeah, I think that I don't remember if it was Petr Chapin or somebody else, but they kind of talked about you'll have often more than 100 bad ideas before you'll have a good one, and so when you put the whole
We can just let 99 other people have
yeah
these bad ideas for
ex
us.
exactly if you put the whole world together that is playing Magic and you start posting these things, it's a lot faster for you to kind of find something that works that you're interested in that you can kind of work towards. If there are changes you want to make, change them. That's kind of one of the things that I want to talk about is, you talked about learning whether to play, first of all, and how many lists you look at that you think you want to play yourself, Matt? Like, what percentage of lists?
It depends on where I'm at in the format. I mean, I think I've actually played every single deck in Modern at this point, so
What
I don't know.
do you
I mean, on average, I don't know. If I had infinite time, maybe half of them.
Wow, that's a lot. Substantially more than me. But one of the things that's really funny to me is I kind of look at like GP Vegas, for example, kind of like getting on the Chargetron train with you. And I just remember thinking about like this, using I was it Sam Pardee who came up with that deck or
No, it wasn't. Although in our friend circle, he's been credited like 15 times now.
Did he play that deck on his stream or something?
I don't think so, but it's
Wow.
possible.
Sam Pardee just getting like mad love. Anyway,
I mean, to be fair, every time that like Mox Opal gets broken in Modern, it's probably those guys, so.
it's just Sam Pardee and Matt Nass.
Yeah.
They just have a book club and they it's the Mox Opal book club. But no, for real, like I think about that and I think that one of the things that net decking does in a sense of letting you play more different decks that are good Because I think back to the, like, all of the times where I registered for an F&M with my own brew that was like hot garbage. Like hot garbage. Not that I don't do that still today. I'm just saying, like, the number of times where I was like, all right, I'm gonna build this deck before this tournament, I'm gonna try it out, and then like it's round three and I'm like, dude, my mana is terrible. This card does nothing. My sideboard doesn't make any sense. And one of the things that you can kind of get from like looking at FIVOs or looking at the decks that got Mythic is you just kind of get to stand on the, stand on the backs of the entire community and decrease your own workload.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I could just go pick a 5-0 list and probably just go to a local tournament and do reasonably well and learn a lot. And I just don't think that that was true 6 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the information is certainly more readily available than it once was.
Yeah. So when you're
I
kind
do think I do think that's a lot to do with the reason why the stigma is kind of lifting on net decking, right? Because it's a tool that's so easy for everybody to do that everybody's doing it.
Yeah, I mean that's absolutely true. I think that I don't. How often were challenges posted? Or dailies?
You
Were they
mean
called
dailies?
dailies?
Yeah, and dailies. I don't remember how often they were posted, but once a week maybe.
Yeah. So it was just less data to go off of. I mean, now you've got Arena Mythic cast and Arena deck lists tweeting out, people's deck lists as they get Mythic, and it's just a lot of things. A lot of information coming in, and it's kind of now up to you to utilize that information. And honestly, at this point, you're probably just at a disadvantage if you don't look at that.
Yeah, definitely.
What, how do you, how does that make, I mean, just let's be honest, how does it make you feel? Like, to know that you kind of have to do this to keep up at this point.
How does that make me feel about what?
About, just about Magic. Like, how does knowing that, tomorrow you're going to probably look at 10 deck lists because you're going to be better for it?
I think the only thing that's changed is that it's gotten a lot harder for me to gain the deck list advantage because everybody else has picked up onto my techniques.
Fair enough, fair enough. Well, what?
Back when I was the only one net decking, it was a lot easier.
It's way easier when you're the only one with a good deck.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about tuning really quick. Let's kind of talk about, Matt, it's Friday morning. It's really slow at Oasis Games. You've already sorted 16 sets. You got some DR on your break. You're pulling up deck lists. What are things that you're looking for when you're looking at deck lists?
One of the main thing I do when I'm looking at deck lists, like if I'm pretty sure of what deck I want to play, is I'll look at what sideboard cards each of the different lists are playing, just to get an idea of what sideboard cards are available.
Okay. Does that do you often find a list that you like, run that through a league, then change a couple cards, or are you often having a different sideboard because you want to be prepared for different things?
It really depends. I'm not really going into any league trying to figure out cards to change or anything like that. So if I'm changing cards from league to league, it's because I specifically ran into a scenario where I think that a card is bad
Okay.
or wanted a specific card.
Okay. So is there an example that you can go to with Chargetron? I mean, we played a very different list than the list at the top end of the SCG.
I don't have specific examples with Chargetron, but I do have a good example for this.
Sure.
I recently played in a PTQ, and I decided pretty early that I was going to play Devoted Druid because I think it was the best deck. And my only thought was that the bad matchups are like Jund, Grixis Death Shadow, and like blue-white control.
Sure. Like hard blue white.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, no, you have a good matchup against Stoneblade. So going into the tournament, I had bounced around between a bunch of different Devoted Druid combo decks, and eventually I arrived on a list that I really liked, and I liked it so much, and it was quite a few cards different than what I was doing before that I just decided that I would take this person 75 and just take that to the tournament. And I actually got massively punished for it because the sideboard of this deck was so bad. The 60 was like perfect, and the sideboard was mostly unplayable. Like I think I sided in six total cards. Like I basically just didn't have nine sideboard cards that day.
So how do you think you could have avoided that?
I think that I could have avoided that by, I mean, for one, I could have found this list sooner. It definitely got posted earlier than I found it. And for two, I could have given more thought to the sideboard. I think that it was more of just a, wow, this person's main deck is so good that clearly their deck building prowess is beyond me, so I should just play the 75.
Sure. So how do you kind of go into under? I mean, let's say that isn't the scenario that happened. They actually did look at the sideboard. You broke it down, and you decided you wanted to play something different. How would you have gone about that?
Well, I would have thought about which cards I want for different matchups. I mean, the big one that I would have played would have been Mirran Crusader. And I probably would have won that PTQ.
Yeah, I mean, the Mirran Crusader was a card that we've been playing, at least in Stoneblade lists, of different varieties that we had really liked in different matchups. I think it's one you could have easily arrived to in this very creature-based deck.
Right.
Do you think that the fact that you weren't playing Stoneforge led you to think less about that kind of stuff?
That was certainly the reason why I decided not to even consider Mirran Crusader. I was like, well, you know what? It's probably bad because I'm not playing Stoneforge Mystic. But the thing was that Jund wasn't actually that popular, but Grixis Death Shadow was. And they honestly go to like 4-6 a lot, especially when they know they're playing against combo decks. So if you just like play Mirran Crusader, it's often just lethal on board.
Yeah, I think about this a lot when I look at something like Titan Shift sideboards. And one of the things that I had noticed is kind of Force of Vigor picking up in Titan Shift recently. And, you know, rather than going and playing a bunch of tournaments with Force of Vigor, I just kind of broke down situations. I was like, okay, well, when do I want Force of Vigor versus the other things that I'm playing? And kind of breaking down, you know, each time that, you know, through a league, as I was playing the cards the Force of Vigor would have replaced, I break down like, okay, would Force of Vigor been better here? And pretty often the answer was no. Like, Force of Vigor would have not been better than Ancient Grudge here. It actually would have been worse. And kind of breaking down situations that way. But you didn't have the opportunity to do that.
No, certainly not at that point. But I'd played so many leagues with Devoted Druid that I could have trusted my instincts on the sideboard more. Like, I mean, for instance, it had a one of Core Firewalker in the sideboard. And that's just nonsense. I sided it in once in the entire tournament, and it was actually bad in the matchup I sided it in. So
you think you should have been playing zero?
Yes, yeah, zero is definitely better than one.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we can kind of do to avoid these kind of mistakes is, I mean, first of all, you did trust your gut on one thing, right? And that was the 60 was great, and you were right. And you were rewarded for playing that 60, you know. But I think that if you had actually just taken the time the night before and written down a sideboard guide, you would have realized that you probably thought your sideboard was nonsense.
That's certainly true.
So do you think that that's something that you can do to, you know, that our listeners can do to avoid similar mistakes?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think sideboard guides are not especially helpful. I mean, they are helpful to have, but they shouldn't be, you shouldn't stick to them, like, religiously, you know?
Yeah.
But I think the act of writing a sideboard guide is insanely helpful, because not only will it help you know what you're trying to do in a matchup, but it will also help you decide if your sideboard is bad.
Yeah, it's something that I've tried to do more often lately, is kind of just before a big tournament, I'm just like, all right, I'm going to write down my sideboard guide. And I have certainly changed my sideboard a couple times, going like, I have 9 cards for this matchup, and this is a good matchup. I have literally no idea why this is my sideboard.
Right.
And I think that when you're, you know, when you're net decking, this is something that you kind of have to, you know, check yourself before you wreck yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah, it can certainly happen, especially if, I mean, a lot of people also tend to change sideboards without, like, giving enough thought to it or any testing at all, in which case you might actually end up with, like, 9 cards for a matchup when you don't realize it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it forces you to do a couple things. It's also something I preach on the show all the time, but it forces you to think about, what is my role in this matchup? You know, should I be doing something different on the player of the draw? Like, why should I be doing those things? And just kind of asking yourself those questions, I think, kind of breaks barriers that I don't think that we realize that the act of taking somebody's deck off the internet places on ourselves. But,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really hard to understate the importance of deciding what your role is supposed to be in any matchup. Like, I know I just talked about how I was only siding in, like, 6 total cards, like, out of the 15 in my sideboard. And this isn't, like, in one game. This is, like, 6 cards throughout the whole day. Like, I only use these 6 cards in my sideboard. But the main reason for that was honestly because I realized that in every single matchup, my job was just to be the combo deck. So, like, I would never side in more than 1 or 2 cards in any matchup.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of people will just make that mistake and just realize that, like, even if a card is good in a matchup, if it doesn't fit your game plan, it's not worth bringing in.
Right. Yeah. Well, I hope that what this podcast did this week is break the stigma for people that might have it on themselves, break the stigma that you might be placing on other people, and also just give you some tips for, you know, stuff to go to. I would recommend people just checking out Goldfish on their, I mean, come on, you got a smartphone, you're sitting on the toilet, look at some deck lists. I know you're listening to this podcast on the John, so, like, what's the difference? You know, I think that there's just a lot of downtime that we have that if you're trying to improve at Magic, you could just kind of put some of that downtime into doing these things. And I think it pays dividends. I think it's one thing that really helped us for a long time as we were first starting to play Magic. And it's something that I have been trying to be better at, specifically in Modern. It's really helped me recently, just understanding, you know, whether I'm playing humans or whether I'm playing Tron or, you know, these different decks, that as I'm trying to, you know, broaden my horizons in that format, looking at, you know, different shadow lists and like what their composition are, like what should I be expecting in game ones, what should I be expecting from there, you know, net decking actually kind of helps with that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, well, that's going to do it for this week, Matt. Anything you want to say on the subject before we kind of jump off?
I think we pretty much covered it.
Awesome. Well, if this episode helped you, don't forget that you can hit that like button, hit that subscribe button over on YouTube, share the podcast if you're listening in podcast form with your friends. It's definitely really appreciated. You know, Matt's been eating a lot of couple noodles lately, so head on over to that Patreon. We'll get him a steak. you know, you got to make sure we got to, Matt's like under $1.20, guys. We really got to feed this guy. So head on over to Patreon or this guy's going to starve. Where you can find me at Spencer13H. You can find Matt at The Witch Clan. You can find the podcast over at CCMTG. You can go to the swag page on constructorism.com. Every shirt goes towards a cup of noodles for Matt. And you can join the Discord to join our upcoming events and more to come on that soon. Matt, do you have anything you want to say before we go?
It's good to be back.
I'm glad to have you back, man. Yeah, I enjoyed this. Well, we'll talk to everybody next week with another episode of Constructive Criticism.